At the end of this week's parsha, Parsha Shlach, we read about the mitzvah of tzitzit. And, of course, on the tzitzit, one of the most important things, v'natnu al tzitzit hakanaf petil techelet, you should put on the corner fringes a string of techelet. Techelet was a blue dye that was fabulously expensive in the ancient world. And it was something that was desired. It was something that all of the peoples in the area, especially around the Mediterranean, but all the way through and into the Near East, it was something that was hoarded. It was something that was used. It was something that was very, very well prized and appreciated. But it actually brings up a question that we can think about in the cultural context of the ancient world, because Techelet had a sister dye, Argaman, and it's usually translated as a red-purple. The Argaman, or the purple, was also expensive, also came from a sea creature, a shellfish, also something that was very, very much desired in this entire region of the Mediterranean. And in fact, if you look within the Western world, the most prized of the colored fabrics were actually the purples and the reds. The techelet was much less desirable. The Roman clavi, for example, were the stripes on the tunics worn under the toga, and that expressed class and status. And the highest in the hierarchy of colors of those clavi were purple. The heroic general returning triumphant from war donned a toga picta, completely purple and embroidered with gold. "It brightens every garment," writes Pliny the Elder, "and shares with gold the glory of the triumph. For these reasons, we must pardon the mad desire for purple." And to this day, this partiality exists among those who inherited the Roman sense of fashion in the ecclesiastical garb of the Catholic Church, the red and the purple. Yet to the Jews, this was not the case. "We prized above all other colors, techelet, the sky blue wool. And it's primarily techelet that makes up the clothes of the Kohen Gadol. Most of the kelim, the vessels in the Mishkan, were covered with purple or argaman, but the covering of the Aron Kodesh, when it traveled, was made of pure techelet. And of course, as we see in this week's parasha, each Jew is commanded to tie a thread of techelet to the fringes of his beged, of his garment." And one wonders why that should be the case. Techelet, of course, was precious, but so was argaman. So was purple, and so was torat shani, crimson red. So what was it? What was it about blue that made the Jews choose that hue? I'd like to consider three ideas, three conceptions, and paradigm shifts in thinking, changes in mindsets that utterly and profoundly transform the world. And I believe that they have a common thread that unites them and will hopefully lead us to a thought that can help answer the question I just posed. The first, and I'm not necessarily going in chronological order, and neither am I going in order of importance. The first belongs to the greatest scientist of all time, Isaac Newton. Newton essentially invented modern science and contributed to, we might even say, founded the fields of optics, mechanics, celestial mechanics, and countless others. I want to focus, though, on his influence on mathematics. To a great extent, Newton was able to accomplish so much in this area because of his daring and what was at the time extremely provocative and radical willingness to contend with the notion of infinity. James Gleick, in his wonderful biography of Isaac Newton, writes, "He relished the infinite as Descartes had not." "We should never enter into arguments about the infinite," Descartes had written, "for since we are finite, it would be absurd for us to determine anything concerning the infinite, for this would be to attempt to limit it and grasp it. So we shall not bother to reply to those who ask if half an infinite line would itself be infinite, or whether an infinite number is odd or even, and so on. It seems that nobody has any business to think about such matters, unless he regards his own mind as infinite. Yet it turns out, concludes Gluck, that the human mind, though bounded in a nutshell, can discern the infinite and take its measure. And so, Newton contemplated infinity and used it, even if he couldn't fully define it or understand it. He worked with the infinitely large, as in an infinite series that never ended, and especially the infinitely small, the infinitesimal, which led to his invention of what is arguably the most important of mathematical tools, the calculus. The second world-changing idea that I think we need to consider is the momentous shift in perspective that took place at the beginning of the 20th century regarding the most basic characteristics and essential nature of light and matter. And that, of course, is the theory known as quantum mechanics. As that theory began to take shape in the minds of its founders and inventors, and especially as understood by Einstein, there came to be the realization that the finite, namely a particle, and the infinite, namely a wave, coexisted in the most elemental and foundational manner, in energy, in matter, in the very fabric of the universe. This realization led to the arcane, almost mystical equations that are used by theoretical physics theoretical physicists to probe the nature of subatomic particles, to predict their behavior, though the concept is far from intuitive. The great physicist Richard Feynman once quipped, "I can safely say that nobody understands quantum mechanics, and yet the notion that the finite and infinite are both inherent simultaneously does in fact lead to a theory that describes nature quite precisely." And finally, I'd like to consider one last world-changing idea, a shift not of mathematical or scientific view, but of religious and spiritual perspective. The revolution founded by Avraham Avinu, namely the rejection of paganism and the advent of monotheism. This was perhaps the most influential and far-reaching, not to mention drastic and profound, paradigm shift of all. At its core, paganism constrained the gods, sought to quantify their sphere of influence, their powers, their jurisdictions. Avraham recognized that there is one God, omniscient, omnipotent, beyond the boundaries of time and of space. In short, God was in all ways infinite. But the most radical idea that Judaism embraces is that man, a finite being, and not a particularly impressive one at that, can have a relationship with the infinite, with God. Hinei na'alti ledaber im Hashem va'anochi afar va'efer. Here I venture to speak to my Lord, I, who am but dust and ashes. Those, of course, are Avraham's words. The essence of Judaism is that man, finite, constrained, and limited as he is, can indeed have a relationship with the infinite. And that, I believe, is why Judaism so values Tchelet over all other colors. One can have a passion for red. He can adore the purple. But in blue, he can get lost. The great Russian artist Vasily Kandinsky once said, and Kandinsky actually had a fascinating neurological condition known as synesthesia, where he experienced color as sound. Each color had its own tone, and vision had a musical element to him. Kandinsky writes, "The darker and the deeper blue gets, the more it calls man to infinity, making him long for the pure, and finally the ultimately sensitive." Same view is brought out by the artist and designer Yves Klein. He loved blue and even patented a specific shade known as IKB, International Klein Blue. He describes what can only be viewed as a religious experience. "As I lay stretched upon the beach at Nice, I began to feel hatred for the birds which flew back and forth across my blue sky, cloudless sky, because they tried to bore holes in my greatest and most beautiful work. Klein got lost in the infinity of the blue sky and hated the birds for bringing him back to reality, for reminding him of his finitude, of his distance from the sky, and from the fact that he could never really touch it, experience it. The birds knew what Klein had tried to ignore, that the sky was not his. The book that my wife and I wrote, The Rarest Blue, was published in Hebrew under the title Lit'om Mehashamayim, to taste the sky. This phrase comes from a Liberian myth about a young mother who eats too much of the sky. The gods punish her with the tragic death of her baby daughter, but as a consolation, they teach her the secret of blue dyeing, so that she can in turn share that with others, and so people can hold and touch the sky in some small measure and in some lesser way. Tchelet signified to the Jew that he could have a relationship with the infinite. By holding the Tchelet strings in his hand as he contemplated the words, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Echad, one, Echad in the sense of unique, Echad in the sense of infinite. By pressing the Tchelet strings to his lips as he read, Uri'item oto uzchartem, and you will look upon it. That is the thread of Tchelet, and you will remember. By touching Tchelet, the Jew can imagine that he can come close to God. Tanya, Haya Rabbi Meir Omer, Manish Tana Tchelet mikol minei tzivonim, mipnei sha'tchelet dome liyam, v'yam dome lerakia, v'rakia lechisea kavod, sheneemar v'tachat raglav kemaasei levnat ha-sapir, u'ke'etzem ha-shamayim la-tohar. Rabbi Meir said, what is unique about Tchelet? Tchelet evokes the unfathomable depths of the sea, which remind us of the infinite sky beyond our grasp, which leads us to the incomprehensible, to God's holy throne. As it is written, and beneath his feet, a pavement of blue sapphire, like the very sky for purity. I once heard, in the name of the Meshech Chochma, and actually the Radziner Rebbe of Gershon Henoch Leiner says something very similar. In Judaism, there is the notion of v'halachta b'drachav imitatio dei, emulating God. Mahu rachum, afata rachum, just as he is merciful, so should you show mercy. Mahu kadosh, afata kadosh, just as he is holy, so you should be holy. Continuing this idea, says the Meshech Chochma, just as he is infinite, so you should be infinite. And what he means and he says is so many of our problems, our frustrations and anxieties, come from the recognition of our limitations, physical, emotional, intellectual. But often those are self-imposed limitations. I'll never be able to do that, we tell ourselves. That's just not my strong point, we know, justifying our laziness or our reluctance to try something. We are capable of so much more than we imagine we are. We can accomplish anything if we believe in ourselves and if we're willing to take risk and maybe to fail. As Herzl said in Tirtzu Ein Zu Agada, if you have true will and complete confidence, you can transform any dream into reality. And Tchelet, says the Meshech Chochma, is at the very edge of the garment and stretches out even beyond that. It calls you to leave your limits behind and venture out past the boundaries that you have set for yourself. And perhaps the best way to forge a relationship with the infinite God is for us to develop that same trait, to find the infinite within ourselves and the Tchelet which pushes us beyond and farther into the unknown, true, but beyond what we even think that we're capable of. The Tchelet that we hold in our hands and the Tchelet that we press to our lips leads us and guides us to that relationship with the infinite, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu.